Hi, I'm Ted Zoller, and you're tuned into On the Heels of Innovation, a podcast powered by the Entrepreneurs Genome Project at University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. How is it that some people are successful in pushing their ideas further and faster than the rest of the world? What characteristics do they share? Which skills did they work to hone? And what lessons have they uncovered through each step forward and back that can inspire you to accelerate your own ideas for a business or venture? This podcast will explore the perspectives, insights, and journeys of innovators and entrepreneurs who combine creative thinking and perseverance to go beyond the expected. On the Heels of Innovation is powered by the Entrepreneurs Genome Project, which is a research initiative that I lead with my students in the Entrepreneurs Lab class at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, revealing the DNA that makes up successful entrepreneurs. Hi, this is Ted Zoller, and I'm the T.W. Lewis Professor of Strategy and Entrepreneurship at UNC and the director of this Entrepreneurship Center. And we're really pleased today on the heels of innovation to welcome my friend Tom Byers, who is the director of the Stanford Technology Ventures Program, also a professor at the Stanford School of Engineering, a leader in entrepreneurship. And we're very privileged this year to have Tom on our campus at UNC and at Duke as the Cohane Distinguished Visiting Professor in Entrepreneurship. In fact, you've been working with Duke and UNC, our colleagues, to develop a really great idea. So welcome to UNC and Duke.
Thank you, Ted. It's been a fantastic opportunity to connect so closely with my friends at both Duke University and here at Chapel Hill.
You know, when we were getting into the scope of the professorship, I asked Tom, you know, if you had white space, what one thing would you care most about? And his answer surprised me a great deal. Tom's an expert in technology commercialization, an expert in all things innovation. Yet there was another topic that came top of mind almost immediately. And Tom, what was that topic?
Well, thank you for the kind words about calling me an expert. I have been an entrepreneurship educator now for almost 25 years, and I do it because I love entrepreneurship. I think it's a great mindset and enabler to create positive change, and it's obvious in its impact on society and our world. So to answer your question directly, what's been bothering me is the news. And there's certainly different facets of the news that bother different people, but I'm talking specifically about the news about the technology sector, which now is such an important part of the world's economy and has impact on all of us. I mean, what isn't a technology company anymore when you think about it? And the role of entrepreneurship and innovation in not only creating these incredible enterprises, but some of the malfeasance and behaviors that have taken place, especially most recently, that might just have something to do with certainly we should feel responsible as entrepreneurship educators to take a hard look at.
You know, one thing that really struck me in our conversation, Tom, was you portrayed that entrepreneurship, something that's near and dear to our hearts, something we both love so dearly, is on a collision course with ethics. And that disturbed me because I know that ethics are a bedrock of everything we do in the classroom, but things have gone astray. Could you give us a sense of how you look at that now and what you're seeing on the street that indicates that this is our highest value target?
Well, you know, what I'm seeing on the street, as I'm sure everybody listening to this podcast can relate to, whether it's the here's one fact that bugged me. Just recently, the Financial Times and McKinsey list of books that you must read in 2018 included two books about Silicon Valley, and the only two books about Silicon Valley. One was Bad Blood, about the story of Theranos and the apparent fraud that took place there. And the other one was Brotopia, which talked about sexual discrimination and misogyny being rampant in quote-unquote Silicon Valley. So what got to me is I know these people. And I am not on some mission to become a judge, and I'm certainly no angel. I'm not
who
talking.
I
am not talking from a position of moral superiority at all. What I'm thinking about is, okay, there's always been bad apples in Silicon Valley, I'm sure, since its emergence 80 years ago, just to remind everybody. And it, but it's the last 20 where it's taken off in such a profound way to infect, you know, everyone. So if you look at the Facebook issues with privacy, today's news about Google and the employees, well, a number of them walking out because of some issues there. The story of that's profiled in the book Bad Blood, just one after another of these stories of strange behaviors and if maybe to an extreme, malfeasance, has led to what I think is a crisis. And the crisis meaning in my community, the community that you and I, Ted, are so proud to be part of. And I think we've always thought that as we went from just a few people teaching entrepreneurship, say 20 years ago, to a lot of people teaching entrepreneurship at every college, and frankly, across the entire spectrum of majors and levels of college students, you know, we've sort of been, not sort of, we've felt a pride and similar emotions that we're doing something really, really good. It's time for us to take a hard look at what we're teaching.
You know, it occurs to me that there's also an undercurrent of Schadenfreude, you know, happening here. It's got all the elements of Shakespearean tragedy. I see it in politics, and now we're seeing it in business, where human beings are being dismantled. Literally, before our eyes, we see people kind of broken apart. You know, I followed Elizabeth Holmes. Elizabeth Holmes is a very young person and a model hero and then really taken apart. I saw the same thing with Travis Kalanick. I've seen elements of that with Mark Zuckerberg. These people were raised up as heroes, and a lot of the young people are following their example.
These signals are clear. But what's also clear and what's given me hope is a few of my alums that I'm about to – and you can see them in their talks with us over the last couple of years have pointed out the way. These are young alums. I'm talking about Tracy Chow, who was one of the founders of Project Include, because this has a lot to do with the diversity and inclusion movement by her and others. Tristan Harris, who was the Google ethicist who left and is now – he's been on 60 Minutes. He's talking about the addiction properties of and strategies of Google and Facebook. I mean, I don't know. I'm not an expert in any one of these things. I don't know whether Elizabeth Holmes committed fraud or not, you know, over at Theranos. I'm not all of a sudden putting myself on some pedestal as the ethicist, but I know – from listening to Tracy, who started Project Include, or Tristan, who's underway with his project, to just even the millennials are talking about this. So it isn't just the news; it's some of the thought leaders of that generation are pointed out that we need to rethink this. And then this is the golden opportunity. The bigger the problem, the bigger the opportunity is what we like to say at Stanford at our center. This is a big problem. So, Ted, it's a big opportunity for us to take a look at our curriculum and the way we even carry on our extracurricular activities around innovation, entrepreneurship, and see, are we stressing values, morals, principles, ethics, if you want to call it that.
It's not enough to lead by example, but we certainly have to do that. And just going back for a moment to this concept of assigning guilt to a person, I think that's unfair. And I'm curious what your views are in terms of the systemic aspects that we need to address. You know, assigning the guilt to one person seems to be a Band-Aid. How do we get to the systemic problem?
Yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm so enthusiastic about this because since being so lucky to have this Cohane Distinguished Professorship here this year, I took that as a opportunity to conduct some research. So we did. And I got students to help me, research assistants, as well as some colleagues. Everybody we talk to sees it as a problem. And they see it, yes, it's at the personal level, helping students develop their own core values. So when they face these kinds of things, they'll at least have a North Star. But you just brought up the systemic issues. We discovered both at the sort of the generic culture, if there is such a thing, of a startup, bifurcates. There's the ones that build values into their companies. I mean, really build it authentically, not just write things on the wall.
That word authentic means a lot.
Yeah, pay the authentic development of their culture. And then there's the norms and behaviors at the startup. There's those, but there's a whole lot that they just leave it to chance. Therefore, we're completely, counting on the character of the founders. So what happens if the founders are caught up in what is generally a system that has a risk in it? The system that's been so amazing, the dance between entrepreneurs and their founding teams with the investment community of VCs and super angels and others, that interaction has developed over many years. What is venture capital is about 50 years old, mm-hmm. and it's been refined over and over. There's never really been a discussion about venture capital and, say, impact investing. And that's not what I'm even asking for. I'm asking for just a general education and awareness that in that dance, values generally have gotten the back seat. I mean, it's been more about assessing the risk. Will the technology work or not? Is the market big enough or not? And, yeah, when we talk about is the team good enough, do they have a good the perfect team being good combination of technologists and operators, business people, values isn't really discussed as part of that risk. It's not. I mean, generally, some firms, I'm talking about VC firms, are now beginning to include that because they see the news too, and they see the downside. And therefore, this systemic issue contributing to this is being examined for the first time. It would be great if that was amplified and exploded into being standard practice. And so at least as educators, we can emphasize that. I mean, we can't go out and change economies or what happens in industry. But what we can do is influence the education of our current students, undergrads and grads. And so if we bring that into our conversation and our own great way of doing experiential learning, then I think the next generation will be set up.
Well said. I oftentimes look at the concept of a value proposition and, by its very nature, the value proposition is actually doing something that's bettering humanity in many cases. So, generally business can be aligned with the social purpose. I always had trouble with the distinction between entrepreneurship and social entrepreneurship. I think it's a false dichotomy. What are your views on that? Do you think the concept of a value proposition, by its very nature, creates new value add, new benefit?
Yeah. Isn't it interesting, Ted? It's got the word value in it.
Sure it does.
So we're talking about values here. Right? That's another way of saying ethics or principles or morals or virtues. And I never thought of it that way until this past year. I mean, I've had my own awakening. Let me clear my conscience for a minute. I have this textbook along with Andrew Nelson from the University of Oregon, and we just finished our fifth edition last year. Fifth edition. The first edition was written right after .com, the beginning of this century. So every 3 years since then, put out a new edition. It's 20 chapters, about 20, 25 pages per chapter. That's the way textbooks are. And it's a linear, of course, sequential exploration of all the concepts of what it takes to start and grow a high potential enterprise. So where am I going? So it's got 20 chapters. The last section, in other words, the last piece of the 20th chapter is entitled what? Ethics. I'll repeat. I'm laughing because otherwise I'd be crying.
I think it's terrific, though, that you've identified it. And we had a conversation before starting the podcast that you're actually now looking at ethics as your primary purpose. And that just blows my hair back. Because my sense is that you're someone who's had important roles in so many different stories of entrepreneurs, and this is going to be your calling. Tell us a little bit how you think about it.
Well, so Ted, we have a lot to learn from the social entrepreneurship community. Whether you believe I tend to agree with you, and it's been sad to date that the educators teaching social entrepreneurship have been relatively disconnected with those of us teaching, I guess, the other kind. And I think it is a false dichotomy. But without even debating that, I just say we have a lot to learn from the starting point for them. By the way, they're not completely innocent of some of these behaviors regarding the topics in the news. Mm-hmm. So there's no panacea here. But we have a lot to learn from the social entrepreneurs. We have a lot to learn from the faith-based or religious-based universities that include this from the get-go.
It's a values-driven model.
Yeah, and the military academies too.
Of course, with leadership.
With honor.
And honor. Do you think we're updating capitalism?
I guess if you extrapolate it, we could. Well, only because tech is such a big part of our economy, the world economy. And entrepreneurship is a word that is used by every leader, whether they're running a large enterprise, a company in business, or running a startup trying to become large. Government leaders use it and agree. Even in our partisan world of politics here in the United States, one thing they probably agree on is entrepreneurship is good, or has been.
Absolutely.
Good entrepreneurship is good. So what does it mean to be good? I mean, that is really what we're facing as the educators. We've got models now that are fantastic, everything from design thinking and what it means to be creative and innovative, all the way over to what it means to exceed those novel inventions and do something about them. In other words, entrepreneurship, with famous models like Lean Startup and other ones that give us a language, give us a set of frameworks to teach every student about these topics, no matter what they're going to do in their life. And remember, their life has an 80-year career ahead probably. So I think he and everybody else that's been touched by this will benefit from learning innovation and entrepreneurship. If we emphasize values before getting into the value creation discussions, and for sure before emphasizing what it means to develop valuations. I mean, that's all these derivatives of the word value. I dream about this stuff now. But if we emphasize values in terms of the definition of principles and what it means at the personal level, what it means at the startup culture level, what it means, as you were hinting at earlier, the overall system level, macro level, if we can include that. And there's ways we can do this, taking advantage of our experiential and active learning techniques, which is most of us we do that instead of lecturing. There's a path here. There's a path here that 10 years from now, we can feel proud that this generation of innovators and entrepreneurial thinkers or entrepreneurial employees will have different outcomes than what we see now.
So, Tom, we've been privileged during your time as the Cohen Visiting Professor this week. As a matter of fact, October 2018, we hosted you at a symposium in ethics and entrepreneurship held on the Duke campus. You were joined by Jeff Sarah McCord, one of our distinguished professors here at UNC, and John Feld, who's the director of the INE Initiative and a philosopher in his own right with a PhD in that area, to have a great conversation. Could you share with us a few of the key learnings that came out of that exchange?
I would be glad to. I'll take a stab at this. We covered a lot of ground in our hour and a half together. One thing that struck me was in the room was a wonderful combination of faculty and students, but primarily faculty and the professional staff that help in centers and institutes. Came from a variety of schools and majors. And that's just, you and I both know, that's unusual for us, unless it's some sort of committee that's reviewing some set of policies at the university. This was around this topic of what I'm dramatically calling the collision of ethics and entrepreneurship education. So we drew from everyone from, say, the business schools and engineering schools all the way to the philosophy department and the Center for Ethics. And it was wonderful to be in a room. I said a few remarks along the lines of what we've been talking about so far. Jeff, that you mentioned, is a professor of philosophy here at UNC Chapel Hill, who has a wonderful take on the risk that entrepreneurs face in being so enthusiastic and optimistic that they might fall to being deceptive when they talk about the product capabilities a little ahead of time, or their revenue projections looking like the infamous, you know, hockey stick where they explode a few years down the road because they think they have to.
So enthusiasm might end up being a moral hazard in some cases because you're trying to convince people, persuade people.
And if it becomes a series of deceptions that gets easier and easier to do, you become a liar. I mean, you know, and right. Not every entrepreneur is going to become a liar. It's not something what he's saying. He says the risk is there. And I know I haven't been emphasizing that in my classes.
Fascinating.
And I teased myself about having the last chapter of the book having the section. Well, in my courses over all these years, I'm so proud of at Stanford, I generally talk about ethics in the next to last session of the term. You know, again, we should be talking about that from the very beginning. And I now have a language getting to know Jeff so well that I can talk about this risk of the optimism and the growth mindset that we preach or, you know, urge people to have could, if we're not careful, turn into a series of deceptions. Now, Jeff was one speaker. The other one was, you mentioned John, who is the director of the Duke Innovation Entrepreneurship Initiative, just terrific fellow. What's really unique about him, he's a professor appointed in the Fuqua School of Business, but he also has a joint appointment with philosophy. So that was cool to have two people deeply rooted and knowledgeable in the scholarship of ethics. So inviting them to the table is a really good idea. Because I'm on the other end of the – it wasn't – not the other side of the table, but the other end of the table. We're all facing forward because my life, the last 25 years, has been dedicated to the education of innovation and entrepreneurship to everybody. So we need more of that, and that's what we plan on doing in 2019.
Well, let's conclude with that. I would love to get your thoughts on how we might translate this to the people on the street. And it occurs to me, you must be as optimistic as I am about the students you see on campus now. These students are very committed to social good and leading with their work. But, you know, the generation that preceded them have the power.
Yeah.
So how do you think we can, as educators, influence people on the street? And how do the young people help to make that change happen?
Well, let me just pick one thing. We interviewed a lot of students this year as part of this Cohen effort. And we interviewed faculty as well. And we interviewed some recent alums. And the number one thing that came back from the students and alums was, and I want to get this right, so I'm looking at my notes here. It says, see, before graduating Stanford or wherever they were going, it says, how to speak up when someone above you is doing something unethical. Teach us how to speak up or what to do. Make this an action-oriented effort. So we tend to talk about it as principled decision-making or principled actions that students can have as tangible ways to navigate.
That's amazing. You know, Tom, I want to thank you so much for bringing this central issue to us and helping us not only put it in context, but putting us in the position to maybe help you lead this new charge. So we're delighted to have you here on this campus. I know my colleagues at Duke would say the same. Thank you for being our Cohen Visiting Professor this year, and thank you particularly for being a pioneer in this important topic.
So. Well, this is a crisis is a terrible thing to waste, and this is a crisis, so let's not waste it. Let's get going.
All right, I'm with you.